Hello, everybody. Welcome. I hope you guys are doing well today. I'm looking forward to connecting with all of you. We are in our second call in our three-call Creating Awareness module. I've got a lot to share today. Before I do, a couple of housekeeping pieces. So number one, I hope that at this point all of you that requested coaching partners have connected with your partner, and hopefully you've already had a call, at least one call, if not two, with your coaching partners. I've heard from some of you so far that it's going really well. But I just want to remind you, if you haven't connected yet, please do. If any questions at all come up around the coaching partner, let me know. As we move forward, you may at some point want to experiment with a different coaching partner. That oftentimes happens. You know, it's good to kind of, I like, you know, having the same partner pretty much throughout the program, but you guys will see, like, as you move forward, you may just want to put it out there in the Facebook group, you know, to do a one practice call with someone else or two. Sometimes it's nice to get some extra practice in there with different types of energy and personality and all of that. The other piece I wanted to mention is we have our call today, and then we've got a call next week. And next week, sorry, I messed up last week, you guys, when I was sharing the schedule with you, so I just want to be clear today. Next week, we are officially moving to our 1 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesdays, and I think pretty much for the rest of the program, we'll be at 1 p.m. Eastern. And then I always take a couple weeks vacation in August. I definitely need it this year. And so after next week, for the rest of August, you'll first of all have time for catch up if you need to catch up with anything. And also we'll be sending some supplemental recordings that if you have a chance to, I highly recommend listening to. It's not going to be any new material. It's going to be some old listening practicums, that kind of thing. I think you guys have already been given access in your member center to the conversation with Makeda Pennycook on diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's a great time if you haven't listened to that yet in August to listen to that. So, you know, you'll have some time and space. We'll come back together the very first of September. Next week, we're going to wrap up our Creating Awareness module with a practicum, and then when we're back in September, we'll start our Breakthrough Questioning module. The last piece I wanted to mention today, I didn't get a chance to mention it last week, is that there is an opportunity for a couple of you, if you desire, if you've been moving through Sacred Depths and are kind of wanting some more Q&A time with me. So time to ask questions on any client case studies that come up, you know, anything that's going on with clients, time to ask questions on your group programs, on curriculum development, on, I know not too many people are doing too many in-person retreats these days, but retreats or online retreats, anything like that. If you've been wanting more access to coaching with me on inner pieces that are coming up for you, or things around your business, your marketing, your messaging, your programming, things like that, then there's an opportunity to do that. It's not something that I usually open up to Sacred Depths. But I happen to have just a couple of spots available, and it can be a great supplement for somebody who just really wants extra, some kind of like extra support and time. Basically, we meet monthly. It's a group, I don't even want to call it a group program, but it's kind of just like ongoing group support. We meet monthly 3 times a month. 2 out of the 3 times a month are open 90-minute Q&A calls, and the calls go really deep. Again, anything from your client work to your group work to your own inner work around your client work or your business, whatever it is, and any types of business questions that you have. I stay on the line until every question is answered. When I do deeper coaching with individuals, oftentimes we'll also afterwards break down the coaching that I did and the coaching skills that I used. So it's an opportunity to go deeper. All the questions that get asked are really rich. Everybody always learns, from everybody else's questions. But you can, if you don't have the 90 minutes, they're on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern. If you don't have the 90 minutes, you can also use it as almost like office hours to drop in and ask your question and then go. So 2 calls out of 3 each month are those open Q&A calls. And then the 3rd call each month is a coaching skills practicum. So we rotate each month. 1 month it'll be a listening skills practicum, the next month a creating awareness skills practicum, questioning skills, strategizing skills, and it's opportunity for you, similar to the practice that we do here in Sacred Depths, it's opportunity to get more practice. Usually I reserve admission just for graduates of Sacred Depths, but as I said, I can open it up for a few people this round of Sacred Depths, if this is something that you feel called to. We're not meeting in August. We'll start again in September, and it would last the duration of this program. So if you're in the full certification level through March. And because, if you want to step in, because you'd be taking it in tandem with Sacred Depths, I'm happy to offer it. It's just a very reduced rate of $175 a month. So it is not something that is necessary. I'm not making a hard sell on this. I just wanted to let you guys know that it was available for a couple of you if you wanted more access to me and more Q&A time and more practice time. You can read more about it and also register at joannalindenbaum.com/CMC. And if you have any questions on it, feel free to ask me. You can just reach out and ask. Okay, so all that being said, let's dive in to our work for today. We're going to move into a subset of creating awareness, acknowledging skills. We're going to look at acknowledging skills. Even if you've learned acknowledging skills before, we're going to look at it in a completely different way than you have in the past, or I should say a deeper way. But before we do, there are a couple of pieces that I just wanted to come back around to from last week as we were looking at reflecting hard truths. And also consulting, just some follow-up pieces to that. So one of the pieces that can come up particularly, and this relates to consulting a little bit, is when a client asks you to tell them what you think about a situation, right? So, it might be, now, like I said last week, sometimes we are in a consulting mode within our coaching, right? So that happens to me oftentimes when I'm supporting a client with marketing or messaging or looking at business model, right? I have a certain expertise and I know that they've hired me for that expertise. They actually want my opinion. but there are other times every now and again that a client, you know, where it's not appropriate, right? It's not a consulting moment where a client maybe has a big decision to make or they're trying to understand a situation that has happened and analyze it, or a choice that they have to make, right? And they ask you, well, what do you think? Or, you know, what would you do? And so, you know, a lot of times the question comes up of like, is that coaching? Can I tell my client, you know, if my client asks me, what should I do in this situation? You know, what's the right answer there? So first of all, it's your personal choice as a coach if you want to, when a client asks, what do you think or what would you do, right? I sometimes do answer. And if I do, it's only if it's if I do it in a particular way, because sometimes what a client needs from you is to tell them what you think, right? There's nothing wrong with that. It can sometimes be helpful if a client is having trouble seeing their blind spots, or their obstacles, or their weaknesses, or their strengths. What you want to be careful of, as we spoke about last week, is to not guru them if the situation comes up. So when a client asks me what I think, I do it very much in the style of creating awareness and reflecting the truth. I make sure to ask as many relevant and breakthrough questions as I can first, because the client might be able to come to what they need for themselves. So again, I approach it with not being the guru, with being willing to be wrong, with reflecting blind spots and higher perspectives that I see. And sometimes, particularly if it's a client that I feel might be relying too much on what I think before I reflect truths or create awareness or anything like that, I might also ask something like this first. How will my opinion help you? Or I'm happy to share my opinion. It's going to be my truth, but it might not be yours. How will you use and take in my opinion? Right? So sometimes asking questions like that first, will support a client to take whatever it is that you reflect back to them, share with them, whatever your opinion is, but use it in a way where they're really activating their inner wisdom and their agency, right? And as practitioners, that's, you know, a principle that we always want to follow, right? Whatever we do, however we share anything with a client, however we create awareness, we want to do it in a way that's going to really support the client to activate their inner wisdom and their agency. The other piece I wanted to share is that last week we looked at techniques for reflecting harder truths. Now that we kind of got the harder truth reflecting out of the way, there is another way to reflect where you can easily create awarenesses. And most situations, honestly, when you're going to be reflecting back to clients, most situations aren't going to be hard truths, right? It's going to be truths. So I find that it's really valuable and really effective to, as you're working with a client, as you're in a client session, to be consistently thinking about where and when can I reflect back to a client. And particularly after a client shares something that's significant something that's significant or something with a lot of details, you want to take a moment to reflect. And here's how I do it. Let's say a client has just shared something significant or something with a lot of detail. I'll say, let's pause here for a moment. And this is what I'm hearing, and I want to make sure that I'm getting it right. Right? So very similar in some ways to reflecting the hard truth. Not, you don't need as many of the steps, right? I'll say, this is what I'm hearing, and I want to make sure I'm getting it right. And then I'll reflect back to the client what they have just shared. And as I reflect back, I'll emphasize the most important parts that are wanting emphasis. Oftentimes, I will be cognizant of using the client's own language while I'm reflecting back. And then other times, I'll be cognizant to insert new words or new phrases that the client hasn't yet shared, because that reflection back will help them take whatever the truth is even more deeply. This can be such a beautiful, powerful, and an elegantly simple and effective way to help clients feel seen, heard, and loved, as well as to create awareness. Because sometimes clients speak the truth, right? Like, you'll hear the truth come out of their mouth. But just because they've spoken it doesn't mean that they have fully taken it in for themselves. So the reflecting is a mirroring technique that gives your client the space and the opportunity to take their truth in. Gives them the space and the opportunity to take their truth in. Again, because oftentimes, even if we speak something, or even if we, you know, in an intellectual way kind of know it, we maybe haven't fully taken it in. Mirroring, reflecting in this way, for me, is a way of mirroring. And mirroring is an incredibly powerful tool. So even for young infants, we're all born with something called mirror neurons. And what those neurons do is they help us to feel good and give us a sense of ourselves when we experience another individual mirroring what we've done. And we see this particularly in infants and in babies. So some of you might know that it's very nurturing to an infant to mirror the sounds that the infant makes, or the faces that an infant makes. Even at a very, 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 very young age, when a baby sees, like if they stick their tongue out and you're looking at them and you stick your tongue out, you mirror that back at them. That is, it creates a sense of self and a sense of validation. We can see this in young children, and that's been scientifically proven. We can see this also in young children. So, you know, for example, with my children, one of the ways that I reflect, and this is a great segue into what we're going to be looking at next, but if one of my kids is frustrated, I will mirror back to them, right? I'll say, I see you're frustrated right now. What that does is it gives a sense of self and a sense of validation. There have been studies done that mirroring is a highly effective tool in sales conversations. So, for example, they've done studies with salespeople that are in person, but the same works if you're over the phone or on Zoom. There have been studies that have been done that the salespeople that mirror what their prospects, the body language that their prospects have. So, for example, if the prospect leans back in the chair, and then the salesperson leans back in the chair, and then if the prospect folds their hands and the salesperson folds their hands, as well as using the language that the prospect uses, studies have done that those sales processes are always more effective. So mirroring is a magical, I think it's like a magical tool that we as practitioners have to support our clients to be able to really see themselves, to feel seen and heard by us, but also to be able to really see and hear and understand and know themselves and their experience. And so, as I said, there's a great segue actually into what we're going to be looking at today, which is a subset of creating awareness called acknowledging. Now, there are two types of acknowledging skills that we're going to be looking at today. We're going to be looking at honoring what is as acknowledging and celebrating as an acknowledging. And as I said earlier, we're going to be looking at them in unique ways. So let's first talk about honoring what is and what this even means. What honoring what is means, or what it is stating the obvious or not so obvious, as a practitioner, stating the obvious or maybe not so obvious, as a way of helping your client to feel confirmed and validated in what they're feeling or experiencing. Know that they have a right to feel the way that they're feeling, to help them know that they're not abnormal or strange for struggling or feeling the way that they do. Honoring what is a way of stating the obvious or not so obvious, as a way of helping your client to become aware of or connect more deeply with what they are really feeling and experiencing. It's a way of supporting a client to accept their situation or themselves. It's a way of helping a client to trust themselves and to feel nourished. So let me give you first some examples of honoring what is. For example, let's say you're having a conversation with a client and they're telling you about something that happened to them that was really surprising to them. And particularly as they're telling the story, it's like they're feeling weird that they were surprised by it, or maybe not as much of an expert because they were surprised by it, or maybe they're making up a story about themselves because they were surprised by it. Honoring what is, one example might be to say, you know, that would have surprised me as well. That would have really surprised me, right? Or if a client is sharing something that really upset them, and they're talking about, you know, this, that, and the other thing, and you hear that they're really frustrated, whether or not they've used the word frustrated or not, honoring what is could look like saying, that must have been really frustrating, or that was really tough, or I know that you worked hard on that, and it's so normal to be disappointed right now. Sometimes honoring what is can be, sounds something like this. A client is sharing about a romantic relationship that they're in, and they're really sad because they know that the relationship just isn't working out, and you know, they want to bring it to a close, honoring what is may sound like, I know it's really hard, and it's also clear that you've moved beyond that relationship. Here are just a couple of other examples of honoring what is. Let's say a client is sharing that, you know, they tried to do something and it just didn't work out. It sounds like that was really hard, even though you gave it your best shot, right? And I'll just give one other example for now. I don't remember all of the details, but a couple of years ago at one of my facilitator trainings that I was leading, we always do a big piece on working with the mother and the archetype of the mother and relationship of the mother, and we were doing some really deep work around it. And one of the women in the room, she worked through a lot of anger that had to do with her mother and, you know, all of that. But she got to this place where she was a little bit stuck, and she was talking about the anger. She had processed through the anger, but it was clear that there was something else going on there as she was sharing. I can't remember all the details of what she was sharing, but what I do remember is that I paused at a certain moment and I looked straight at her. And she'd been talking a lot about different things her mother had done to her that weren't quite right, you know, all that. But I remember at some point I paused and I looked straight at her and I said, this is all I said, you love your mother so much. That's it. You love your mother so much. And just that honoring of what was, right? That there was, even despite all of the pain, that there was so much love there, that was what brought the client to just a place of tears, and you could see so much more freedom, because from there she was able to honor that she could have her anger and her love at the same time. So there is a lot of spiritual bypassing that happens, unfortunately, in the coaching industry, in the transformational industry, in the spiritual communities. There is a lot of love and lighting, and I love and lighting when it's the right moment for it. I love positivity when it's the right moment for it, right? And rah-rah and all of that. But unfortunately, what has happened is that love and lighting and positivity have become a standard, particularly in the coaching and transformational industries. And there are moments where it is not appropriate to do that. There are moments when we rah-rah or look at the positive side of things or tell a client it's not so bad or, you know, all the things, right, that it actually is a way of bypassing them and their deeper feelings. And there are moments, and you probably know this either from working with a coach or just being a human being with other human beings, right, communicating and relating with other human beings, there are moments where we do not need the love and lighting, where we don't need the, right, like what we actually need is for another human being to hold space to honor how we're really feeling. Or what, you know, that a situation just is not so great. right? Now, that doesn't mean when we honor what is, it doesn't mean that we're joining our client, for example, in their misery, right, or in their victimhood if they happen to have gone there or whatever it is. It's not at all. We can honor what is and use it as an empowerment tool. The way that we can do that is to honor what is from a grounded place, right? Number one, checking all of our filters around it, remembering that energy follows energy, right? We can honor what is and also have an empowering energy or a hopeful energy. We can follow up the honoring what is by asking questions that will support the client to see what their opportunities are, what their choices are, et cetera, et cetera. When we're able to just hold space and honor what is instead of bypass it, again, we support our client to feel seen and heard and loved. We create a deeper connection with the client. The client feels more connected to us, which then leads to more vulnerability and more willingness to have a breakthrough when appropriate around the thing that they're sharing. When we honor what is, we create space for our client to see what needs to be honored, to process it, to deal with it, and to take actions around it if need be. When we acknowledge as a way of honoring, right? We want honor what is. Our clients are then able to acknowledge and honor their own experiences and feelings. And often, and you may have had this experience, literally or metaphorically, take a deep sigh of relief because they don't have to pretend anymore, right, about how maybe they feel. There's full honesty. It brings their deepest feelings out of hiding. And because the truth is, again, like so often, even for ourselves, right, we have to commit. So often we don't even acknowledge for ourselves, right? I'm so angry, for example, right? Or I'm sad, or this is really hard. You know, instead of acknowledging this is really hard, oftentimes what we do is we go to what's wrong with me that I can't get this done, right? So honoring what is really supports clients to be able to see even more clearly what's happening for them. One little sentence that I read once has stuck with me for all of these, you know, for almost two decades, and I want to share it with you because I think it's really powerful and it relates to what we're talking about around honoring what is, which is, this is a sentence, coaching is love in action in a professional setting. Coaching is love in action in a professional setting. And for me, you know, we show our clients that we love them in many different ways, but honoring what is one of the big ways. And again, because so many of us have had experiences in our lives, you know, maybe well-meaning parents or well-meaning teachers, oh, it's not so bad, but you could just do this differently, right? Instead of first, the very first thing is, let's honor what's here, right? Let's honor what is. So how do you acknowledge by honoring what is? Well, everybody is going to, you know, always coach the what based on the who. Each situation is going to call for a different type of energy. But for me, especially if it's something that's really hard, you know, sad, that kind of thing, I'll give it some space. I really consider the tone of voice that it needs. I like to pause and just have, like, after I share what it is, right? Like, you really love your mother. I won't say anything right after that, right? Or that must be so frustrating. I will pause and give space. So that, you know, because a big part of creating awareness is not just what you say to your client, but then giving the space for your client to take it in. All right, let's pause here. I've been talking about a lot of things so far. I'd love to hear what's coming up for you around honoring what is. And also if you had any questions on what I was sharing earlier around reflecting and mirroring. So what are you seeing? What's important? What questions do you have so far? Star two. And we've also got a post going in the Facebook group if you want to post there. I'd love to hear from at least one or two of you. What are you seeing? What's coming up for you? Star two. Is this Kristen?
Yeah, this is Kristen.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have my baby. I'm hoping he'll be somewhat calm.
Oh, that's great. No worries at all.
So I love the acknowledging. One thing I notice when I acknowledge is all of a sudden it'll be like in my territory, like I haven't lost the weight I wanted. And then it can make me
wait, say that like again, Kristen. You need to talk just a little bit better.
Yeah, let me put you. Sorry. I'll acknowledge the problem. So I work with weight loss. And so I'll acknowledge people will be like, I had weight loss surgery. I'm so disappointed with my results. I really want to lose another 10 pounds. And sometimes, like physiologically, I don't really feel like it's always possible for them to lose those 10 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to acknowledge, like do the recognizing, but then I feel like I also, like going back to like in the beginning, how you need to like fix it, fix them and fix, you know, everything. And so sometimes I feel like that's putting also me on the hot seat, like, okay, what are you going to do about it if you're going to acknowledge it? So I'm not really sure how to navigate that.
Yeah, it's such a great question. So first, and it's a great example, right? So first let's look at the honoring part and then we'll look at the fixing part. So.
Okay.
And you're making such a great point, because oftentimes when people share something with us that makes us maybe feel uncomfortable or, you know, makes us feel like we should take responsibility, we want to fix it, right? Which is actually like the exact opposite of honoring what is, right? So I'm glad you're bringing it up, because it's a great way for us to check ourselves. If we go into fix it mode, there may be something that we're bypassing, right? And so sometimes someone goes through the weight loss surgery, they don't get the results that they wanted. One of the first most important things, as you're saying, but I just want to emphasize this, is to honor what is, right? Like, it must be so hard to have gone through that surgery, you know, whatever it is, for them, prepared for the surgery, gone through the recovery, you know, built up and not be getting the results that you want. I really get that. So that's number one, right? To honor what is, to not say like, oh, it's okay, or, you know, whatever the case is. Then from there, you know, again, always coach the one on who. There's lots of different places to go from there. But, you know, sometimes just by honoring what is, pausing, and then giving the client a chance to, you know, be seen and heard in it and then speak some more, that just in and of itself may unburden them a little bit, right, to see, and they may lead where you go next. But if not, depending on the situation, you're going to, instead of rushing to fix it again, right, you're going to want to ask a question that is going to support them to create more awareness, to get to deeper acceptance, or to move them to the next place. Again, it's going to depend so much on context and who that person is and all the different things, but as an example, one question you could ask is, you know, if it turns out that you're not able to lose those next, you know, however many pounds, what's going to be most important for you? Or what is your priority going to be? So that it's not about, okay, let's rush to fix this, but it's allowing the client to start to think about, okay, if this doesn't happen, then what can happen here, right? Or what are the opportunities? That's just one example, again, depending on context, but is that helpful?
Yeah, it definitely opens the door, you know, on addressing it. Yeah, because it's, I guess, yeah, just going through that, because I want them to have, like, a level of acceptance of their weight as well. So a lot of times I'll ask the question, you know, well, what would be different, like, about if you were 140 as opposed to 150, what in your life would change?
Yeah.
And a lot of times they'll say, well, with my self-confidence. And then I start getting or tripping over myself because I'm like, okay, well, how do we get your self-confidence now? You know, so I'm trying to, which is one of the reasons I'm taking this class, of course, is to learn those questions and to get them to be more self-reflective.
Yeah. So that's a great question. We'll look as we get to, you know, probably like rewiring negative thought patterns will probably be good there, or befriending your fear. And, you know, again, depending on context, but I think that's another great question to ask, right? It might be about going into their own beliefs about themselves, right? It might be about starting to, you know, based on what you said, like starting to unhook self-confidence from a number. And the first thing there is to just start to create awareness around the fact that they are hooking self-confidence to a number, and then what the impact of that has been in their life.
Okay.
And the types of choices they've made because they continuously hook confidence into a number, right? Just, you know, so they can start to unwind even in that way. Make sense?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much, Joanna.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anyone else want to share or ask a question? What are you seeing around honoring what is? Star two. Who is this?
It's Brooke, Joanna.
Who? I didn't hear?
It's Brooke.
Hi, Brooke.
Oh, wow, there's a heron flying that just literally flew right in front of me as I got on the call with you.
I love it.
That's so cool. Love it. Okay, so I was like, not going to raise my hand. I really have just a, I have two thoughts. The first thought is I'm actually really feeling in myself this sense of surprise, and I'm noticing maybe a little bit of judgment that we're doing this topic after hard truth. Because I'm feeling how much, to me, this one feels so much more significant, and it, like, precedes the hard truth. I was just noticing as I was listening, like, I'm like, yes, I love this. I'm so on board with all this, and this is way more important than the hard truth thing, or this comes way before it. So that's the first kind of piece. So I'm just, you know, sharing. And then the second one, as I was listening to your conversation with Kristen, is just, you know, there's nothing to fix. And I wrote that in the Facebook group, too, but that was what was coming up for me. So raised my hand, said it, Karen flew by, here we are.
I love it. It's brutal. Thank you for emphasizing there's nothing to fix. And, I think it's great for you to be aware that you're feeling like this is more important than reflecting hard truths. And it could be that for your type of ideal client, this is more important, right? Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that you're never going to reflect a hard truth. But we all have certain skills that we use more than others, depending on our preference as practitioners, as well as what our ideal client needs. So that just that in and of itself, you know, it might be that you have a block to the hard truth. My sense is that that's not true. My sense is that this is a powerful skill that probably has had meaning for you in your personal life, and probably is very important for your clients. How does that land?
Oh, my gosh, that's awesome. It's so true, because I find the hard truth historically super, super easy and natural. And
yep.
I do agree. That's so beautiful, because I agree. Most of the people I work with live in the world of hard truth. They do that to themselves really easily, and they don't as easily use this skill we're talking about today. And I don't as easily personally use it on myself either. So, yeah, genius. Thank you. I feel like major light bulb moment. Thank you.
Yeah, I got chills as you were saying. That's great information. And I'll just add, great information not just for your client work, but possibly for your marketing as well, right? How can that be applied to your marketing? So something to think about there.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. And Alana?
Hi.
Hi.
So a lot just got sort of said, and I want to just parse it out a little for clarity, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Just to make sure I'm understanding. So I'm hearing that there's sort of the difference between mirroring and reflection. I mean, I can give you my understanding, but maybe you could parse that out. Like, to me, mirroring is sort of like, is there a difference between mirroring and reflection, I guess, is the question I'm asking?
No. I was using reflecting and mirroring as interchangeable.
Okay, because I felt like they're almost like reflecting feels like a slightly more, I don't know, not advanced, but like second step maybe is how I was understanding it. So maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, if we kind of get into the nuances, that, like, mirroring, you know, in its, like, purest form is really using the same exact language, right, or the same exact gesture, whereas reflecting could be using the client's language, but as I said earlier, also bringing some other pieces in to help them, other language to help them synthesize and take in.
And then it seems like in the example you were doing with Kristen, there was like a third step, which is like not fixing it, but like those questions felt like another step or level deeper.
When Kristen and I, like,
the movement from, yeah.
Yeah, so that's more like, so when you honor what is, right, something that really sucks or that the client would otherwise bypass, you know, any where they need to feel validated in something that isn't so great or whatever it is, sometimes you'll just reflect by honoring what is and create the space. But oftentimes you'll first honor what is, you'll make the reflection, and then you'll want to follow it up with some questions that will either support empowerment or support seeing choices or, you know, whatever it is that the client needs in that moment based on the context. So usually you're going to follow up in any event, however you create awareness, whether it's reflecting a hard truth or mirroring, reflecting, honoring what is, or as we'll see, celebrating, you're probably almost always going to follow it up with some kind of question. Not always, but almost always.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay. So, let's keep on going. And let's talk about celebrating, because celebrating is another way of acknowledging. And celebrating is, it's like one of those things that, of course, you know, in the coaching industry, in the transformational industry, we know we have to celebrate, but it's something that can actually go very, very deep. I think it's one of the most important skills that you can have as a practitioner. And it's one of the most effective and powerful ways to support clients to reach their goals. And that's because success and successful actions stem from focusing on what's working and what's going well, not from what's not going well. When you can help a client to focus on what's working, what's going well, where their strengths are, you know, what is just what's going on that's really great. It can support a client to have more confidence, to cultivate self-love, to cultivate self-compassion, to cultivate hope, to cultivate satisfaction. And all of these things, confidence, self-love, self-compassion, hope, satisfaction, they all lead to motivation. They all lead to being connected to inner wisdom, and they all lead to being connected to positive energy. And again, this is different than what I was sharing earlier. We don't want to spiritually bypass with positivity, right? But this is for moments where it's appropriate. And we'll get into what that means in a little bit. Leveraging assets and celebrating strengths, I'll say leveraging assets and strengths is way more effective than fixing deficiencies. I'm going to say that again. Leveraging assets and strengths are way more effective than fixing deficiencies. So oftentimes, and I know I fall into this myself too, I have to catch myself in this. Oftentimes, we try to achieve goals by fixing the things that we're not so good at and that we probably will never be great at, as opposed to leveraging and putting more focus and attention and weight on the things that we are really good at or have natural ability in, or have resource to. So, for example, and this has happened more than once or twice or three times, I've had a client who has come to me wanting, and they just can't, they really want to send out a regular newsletter, and they can't understand why they can't send their newsletter. They just can't get themselves to send their newsletter out consistently, regularly. And when we take a look at it, what we see is that they're wanting to write newsletter articles for their newsletter, but a much bigger strength of theirs is talking and sharing and presenting. Writing is a deficiency of theirs. Writing is not one of their strengths. And it's like they're hitting their head against the wall trying to get better at writing or feel more comfortable with writing or write more quickly or more effectively, instead of building on the strengths, which is to make it a video instead of, or a Facebook Live or whatever it is, instead of an article. Somehow society has trained us to think that the way to reach our goals is to fix the deficiency. Now, sometimes there are deficiencies that need, you know, some solving for sure, but part of our job as practitioners is to support clients to leverage their assets. We'll get into more on that envisioning and strategizing, but I bring it up here even as we look at this idea of celebrating, because it has to start with celebrating our clients for their strengths and their resources and what they've accomplished. And I really see that our job as practitioners is not only to celebrate, you know, a particular thing that has happened, a client has reached a milestone, or, you know, they've been able to do yoga every day for a week, or, you know, whatever it is. Yes, our job is to celebrate that. But I really see our job as also is to teach our clients how to internalize the skill and be able to acknowledge and celebrate themselves. As we'll see this throughout this program, really like a sacred depth practitioner, if you're doing the work masterfully, what you're doing is supporting the client in the moment with whatever the situation that they have is. But you're doing double duty because the work that you're doing is also supporting the client to build an internal muscle that then they can call upon over and over and over again, right? And that's certainly true in the case of celebrating. So, again, in case you're not familiar with celebrating, when I say celebrating, I mean celebrating a client for an achievement, celebrating a client for a strength, celebrating when something happens to go really well for a client, you know, all of those things. So all of this might sound easy enough, but human beings in general have a lot of trouble celebrating. And this is precisely why celebrating is such an important transformational skill, because people really have trouble doing it on their own. Even if they have a practice, you know, a lot of people these days have a celebration practice, you know, where they celebrate things about themselves every day. And so this can be challenging for the practitioner, because you want to understand the human behavior behind celebrating as well as your own behavior and beliefs around celebrating in order to be able to really navigate celebrations and use the skill really effectively with your clients. If you don't understand the human behavior on this one and you don't know how to navigate it, then the celebration of your client, when you go to celebrate your client, it can end up shutting the client down or pissing the client off or having the client lose trust in you or having them agree, you know, to you, but not actually really take the celebration in deeply or seriously. So why is it that people have trouble celebrating? Why is this thing that on the surface seems so easy, why can it be tough for people? Well, number one, because human beings, our clients, all of us, tend to focus on the negative and on what isn't working. Number two, for some people, they get an icky feeling when they're being celebrated or acknowledged for something positive. You know, it's like they get this feeling of don't see me, or it's not true, what you're saying isn't true, or if you and I believe this now, you know, that I'm great at presentations, whatever it is, then it's not going to happen again, and then I'll look like a fraud. For some of us, we have trouble celebrating because we don't want to set ourselves up to be hopeful and then to fail. Some people have trouble celebrating because they're taught that it's obnoxious to really think highly of themselves and their accomplishments. Some people have trouble celebrating. It could be a cultural thing, like the evil eye. We have this in Judaism. You know, you don't ever want to say out loud something good that's happening, because the evil eye might come and get you and take it away. Jews don't even traditionally have baby showers before a baby is born because of the evil eye. Can't celebrate too much. some people have trouble celebrating because they don't really believe that whatever it is that you as the practitioner is going to celebrate is that good or that great, right? Like sometimes we see a strength in a client and we share it, and the client is like, oh, why is she even bothering? Like that's not that great. For some people, they have trouble celebrating because they don't know how to receive. In order to be okay with a coach or a practitioner celebrating, in order for it to be effective for the client needs on some level to be able to know how to receive, right? The compliment, the celebration, the acknowledgement. We'll go deeper into, I call it the feminine art of receiving later in sacred depths, but it's just good to know right now. And then the other reason why some people have trouble celebrating, and this goes back a little bit to we're taught that it's obnoxious, but this one is a little bit different. Like, as a culture, we just, we have celebrations, like birthday celebrations, anniversaries, you know, this and that, but it's not ingrained in us to be thankful to, you know, for what we have, right? To really hold what we have with appreciation. So let's look at this a little bit more deeply with some inner work for you first. Because to be able to truly celebrate your client, to, you know, celebrate another person and have it be an effective celebration, you need to be able to feel comfortable both celebrating others as well as celebrating yourself. So let me ask you a couple of questions. How and how often were you honored and celebrated by your family of origin? How and how often were you honored and celebrated by your family of origin? Take a moment with that one. All right, next question. When you were celebrated, what was the motivation? Was it to be truly supportive of you? Was it to pretend that everything was okay when it really wasn't? I call this blowing sunshine up your ass, right? Which is going back to honoring what is. That's why sometimes practitioners don't honor what is. Were you celebrated to put pressure on you to continue to perform well? Were you celebrated to compare to, you know, your parents compared you to your siblings or others in your family? Was it something else? What were the motivations when you were celebrated, acknowledged? What were the spoken or unspoken messages behind the ways that you were celebrated or not celebrated? What were the spoken or unspoken messages behind the ways that you were celebrated or not celebrated? Next question. How did your parents or other role models celebrate or not celebrate themselves or their accomplishments? How did your parents or other role models celebrate or not celebrate themselves or their accomplishments? Got a couple more questions to think about. How did role models or authority figures respond to you if you celebrated yourself? If you celebrated yourself, right? So if you celebrated yourself, how did role models or authority figures respond to you? Were they happy if you celebrated yourself? Did they somehow communicate to you that you were getting too big for your britches? Were they scared that you might jinx yourself or something else? It's important, all these questions, it's important for us to know for ourselves, but also to consider all the different places and stories and narratives that our clients are coming from, too. So how did role models or authority figures respond to you if you celebrated yourself? A few more questions. Next one, do you tend to focus more on the negative or on the positive, on assets or on deficiencies, right? Just be honest with yourself. I can share with you, it is a practice for me to focus on the positive and the assets. My default is to focus on the negative and the deficiencies. And then last question for now, how do you receive compliments? Or how well do you receive compliments? What happens for you when someone shares a compliment or a celebration? And again, I ask these questions, and any time we do inner work questions, there's a couple reasons why we do them. One, just for your inner work, right? The more you know yourself, just the better. You can't lead your clients to where you haven't gone yourself. And that will help you be aware of your own triggers and all of that. But the other reason why I ask these questions, again, is the more that we can be, as practitioners, be aware of the various different narratives that a client might come to us with, the various different experiences, beliefs, you know, that kind of thing, then the more equipped we're going to be to use all of the skills that we learn here in ways that are effective, right? We'll know how better to respond and what to do with our clients. So I'd love to hear some shares on these questions. What are you seeing? What's coming up for you? And Nicole is saying in Facebook, in immigrant families, children were usually not celebrated for achievements because excelling was just what was expected. I had some of that too. I have immigrant parents as well. I can relate to that. Yeah, so why celebrate it, right? It's good to know it for yourself, and also that comes up for your clients, right? So we want to be, that's such a great example, we want to be aware of that before we go to celebrate a client. Number one, if we know that this is true for a client, we want to, you know, really celebrate them because we know that they may not be catching their own strengths, their own resources, their own celebrations. But knowing this about the client may determine how we language the celebration when we share it with them. Star two. Who else? What are you seeing? What's important here? What's coming up around celebrating? Penny.
Hi. I've had this insight. I was thinking about some of the ways in which my mother would celebrate me, but sometimes it would feel like a hollow thing. It would be like a compliment that was way over the top from what was like a piece of art or something that really wasn't that good, and she would be all like, oh, you're so good, and which made me not trust the compliments and the celebrations.
Yeah.
So I have to kind of have my own inner sense of what's real there and true. But then I was thinking about the fact that if in a situation I will naturally go more for the deficiencies and have trained myself more for the positive, but it's almost like I want to say what the deficiencies are, get them out of the way, and then I can point to the positives, and you'll know I'm just not making it up, that I see the whole picture.
Absolutely. So I love this awareness, right? And you could use it to your advantage too, right? So, I mean, you could honor what is, partially honoring deficiencies, right? Like, that's not working so well. You know, because we do, right, like, as practitioners, especially, you know, if you're working with a client, well, I shouldn't even say especially on a project or a business or this or that. I mean, really with anything, and this goes back to why I share about honoring what is. We do want to honor is the deficient, you know, and then from there you can move on to the celebrating. So I think that there can be a strategy in that. What I think is important in what you're sharing, Penny, is that you realize that because of these experiences with your mother, that sometimes you, and I might not be hearing this exactly right, so correct me, sometimes you might be holding back a little bit.
Yeah.
In celebrating with a client, getting really excited for a client's achievements or a strength because of those experiences that you've had, and that's a great filter for you to check for yourself when you're with clients.
Yeah, and it's always helpful for me at some point to just realize, oh, that's where that pattern comes from too, because then I can be more conscious about how I'm using it. So.
Yes, yeah, 100%. Great. Thank you. Kristen.
This was a really interesting insight because I realized that my parents were really good at celebrating like more like work or like school related stuff. And so that sort of stuff I have no problem celebrating or like talking about if I have accomplishments in my business or when I was in school. But what's interesting to me is I realized I don't really celebrate like family or like emotional events. So like, for instance, like I never did a wedding. I never did like a baby shower. I never did like a bridal shower. I don't do birthdays. So I just think it's interesting. I don't really know what that means.
Yeah.
Maybe they were divorced. I mean, they were divorced. So, you know, we had those issues in our family.
Yeah,
but it's interesting to me what I do choose to celebrate.
Yeah. How does, do you see an application there in your client work?
Gosh, that's a good question. I probably have to think about it a little bit more. I know like when Penny was talking, I definitely feel like I am I'm probably over celebratory towards things.
Mm-hmm.
So then when people do give me a compliments, I tend to like, they're like, oh, they're not really serious. Like I definitely feel like they're not telling the truth, and it's probably because I'm not always telling the truth. So I think I have more relation there with my clients, but I'm not sure. I'll have to think about the other one that I, the other insight I had.
Yeah, I think it would be worthwhile seeing what's there. Good.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Who is this? San Francisco. 2747.
Oh, that's me. That's Deb.
Hey.
Hi. I'm on my cell phone today versus on the web, so. you know, what's interesting in exploring this, and I really let myself go deep with it, was most of my parental or parent figure feedback as a compliment came as a form of having it said to my brother, look how you should be. Look at
say
your
that
sister.
Last part
she's
again.
Good at, I never got direct compliments. I would be hearing them say it to my brother. You should be like your sister. She's good in school, or she's organized, or she's responsible. So it was like compliments weren't said to me as positive reinforcement. They were said as a point of comparison to motivate my brother.
Yes.
And I still wasn't even involved in the conversation.
Yes. Yeah. So what kind of beliefs did you form around celebrating because of that?
Part of it was that achievements in the regard the way that my parents looked at them were never celebrated. They were used as motivators for somebody else to do better. So, like, I just didn't celebrate the things that I achieved.
Yeah, they weren't for you.
Hiding.
Those achievements weren't really for you. Yeah.
And also hiding any joy around it because it would be used as a painful reminder to somebody else that they were less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that may or may not be creeping up in your client work, and it, that would be a good thing to just track for a little bit, you know, to see what, you know, some of your initial thoughts or feelings are when you go to celebrate a client or notice a celebration that wants to be acknowledged for a client.
Yeah, what was nice was what came through is that I've really done a lot of work around that, and so I'm able to celebrate myself and my clients and my family and my loved ones from grand achievements of milestones to little everyday emotional experiences because I saw how toxic the opposite was. So I'm really present too. But it was interesting just to have that question come up because I was able to see where old behavior is rooted from.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm so glad you can see that. And again, just another great example for all of us of a narrative that a client might, you know, unknowingly have inside of them that can be keeping them from fully taking in a celebration. Again, just good awareness to have of different types of narratives.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to take one more share. I still have a little bit more that I want to share with all of you today, but these shares are so great. Here, one more. 2528 are your last numbers.
Hey, it's Gloria.
Hi, Gloria.
Hi. These are, yeah, this was such a great part of the conversation. I wanted to share the spoken or unspoken messages behind the ways, I guess, things weren't celebrated for me growing up. I think this question brought up the realization that celebration required time and money, and my parents didn't have either of those. Mm-hmm. And now, as an adult, I believe, like, obviously celebration can look so, like, it can just take form in so many different ways.
Yeah.
But that's probably infiltrated maybe why I don't celebrate externally or bring others into it because of this, like, maybe subconscious thought of, like, oh, it's going to need their time, it's going to need their money to do that. So that was really interesting.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you're bringing this up because I meant to mention that earlier when I was talking about blocks to celebrating. That's the other one. That's the one I didn't mention, is that oftentimes people have trouble celebrating because they feel like they don't have the time to celebrate. You know, you're bringing in the time and money, but sometimes in a coaching conversation, it's like, oh, there's not enough time for that. We have so many things that we have to strategize on or look at, or, you know, the client might feel that way too, right? And it's like we can bypass this thing that doesn't actually have to take a lot of time or energy, but is so important and can be the foundation of the rest of the conversation.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad you're bringing that forward. Thank you.
Can I ask a question as well?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if we'll get into it in terms of techniques, but I also, as we're having this conversation, I wonder about, and I don't know if you can speak to this, but about carrying a neutral presence with the client as a coach. And I think for me, and it might just be me getting into my head or perhaps not trusting myself enough, but the worry of being like relied on for that positive reinforcement, or like the client seeking the validation in the container. So if there's a way, I'm sure there is, like a way to distinguish, you know, between celebrating what they're bringing up in a way that doesn't perpetuate like a pattern or something within the client.
Yeah, it's such a great question. I've got, as usual, I have like a long answer, but I'll try to make it short. So there's this belief out in the transformational industry that, or the self-help industry, that like that if you are an evolved human being, you shouldn't need outside validation. You should just be fully validated inside of yourself and never need like another human being to remind you that you're good enough or awesome, you know, whatever it is. And I do not think that is true at all. Just through my own process as well as working with so many people, what I have really come to see is that most human beings there is a healthy way of needing some outside validation. And celebrating, it absolutely can take the role of that. And I will celebrate a client more, particularly when I feel that they do need some validation. Mm-hmm. That being said, we also, while we're doing that, if it is a person who is not self-validating as well, we want to work with them on their patterns, on their belief patterns, on their fears, on their shadows, to unwind some of that, to get to a healthy place. I don't think that, I haven't seen a case where withholding validation helps that. I think it's actually a combination of creating a supportive container where they can get the mirroring and the validation while also really speaking truth to what the patterns are and working through the patterns.
Yeah, I love that you said that. Thank you. Yeah, that really resonates. Even as in my experience as a client, I love those moments where we can acknowledge and we can celebrate too. So yeah, thanks for shedding light on that.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's a great question. All right. I'm going to lower hands for now, but we'll have time at the end. I'll hang on the line to answer any other questions. But I do want to just speak a little bit about when to be celebrating. This is a short list, but there's some times where it may not be as obvious. So I just want to speak to that a little bit. So obviously, as it comes up in a session, whether it's an obvious thing, right, like, or something that you see a client isn't acknowledging themselves for, or like Laura and I were just talking about, sometimes a client needs validation. So as it comes up, for sure, we're going to celebrate in those moments. But there are other moments where I also bring celebrating in with my clients. So in the prep form that they fill out, I always ask, you know, what are at least three things that you want to celebrate since our last session. The reason why I ask it is, number one, back to helping, one of the roles here is to help a client learn that skill for themselves, right? So by them having that regular in the prep form, getting used to acknowledging and celebrating themselves, it helps build that muscle. But also I read the prep form before the session, and oftentimes I will start a session, after asking what is it that you want to receive. Sometimes I'll do it right before asking what is it that you want to receive. I'll actually mention something from the prep form, like a celebration or something that the client might have emailed me since we last spoke. But I oftentimes, at some point towards the beginning of a session, do like to start with a celebration or acknowledgement, again, because people, they just, you know, we see our problems, but we don't see all the ways that things are going well, and we want to leverage that. As I said earlier, we want to leverage assets and use those as the foundations for problem solving, for achieving goals, for strategizing, all of that. Anytime I'm working with a client and we're visioning, and we'll look at this again when we get to our visioning module, but I'll just mention it now. When we're starting a project, when I'm supporting a client to start to vision out and strategize a project, one of the many things that we'll look at is, what are their assets? What are their resources? Going from strength to strength, right? So knowing what your strengths are at the beginning of a project so that you can leverage them. I like to, and this is a form of celebrating, it's a little bit different than traditionally, but I really like to let my clients know in different ways and through different types of celebrating how much I respect my client, honor my client, admire my client, and celebrate them. So I feel like one of my jobs as a practitioner is to let my client know that I respect them, honor them, admire them, celebrate them in different ways, right? I really believe that another one of our jobs as a practitioner is to support our clients in knowing that they are a person of value. And again, and back to Gloria's question, like oftentimes we just weren't received that mirroring, that validation, right? And we don't do this so that they rely on it, but I like to think about using the coaching container as a corrective and healing container for long-standing patterns. So again, it's like there's the content that we're working on, the goals that the client wants to achieve, all of that. That's one level of what we're working on, but there's a deeper level that's just about the relationship between me and my client and how that relationship is a course correction, a healing opportunity. The relationship itself is a healing opportunity in lots of different ways for the client. As I said earlier, or maybe I didn't say this earlier, sometimes I'll use celebrating, if a client needs encouragement and cheering on, right? Because, similar to the validation thing, everybody also needs a little bit of a cheering section, right? Think about sports games. The cheerleaders are like, yeah, they're there for whatever, patriarchal, anti-woman, maybe sometimes thing that's going on. But another reason why they're there is they actually build morale for the team. We do need some cheering. But similar to what Penny said earlier, when I'm in cheering and encouraging a client on, I always do it with honesty and without exaggeration. Because your clients are smart, right? They're smarty pants. They know that if you exaggerate, it's gonna feel like, as I said earlier, you're just blowing sunshine up their ass, right? We don't want to do that. Holding your client's vision for them. Sometimes when we're down in the dumps, a client is down in the dumps or something hasn't gone the way they wanted, it's very easy to let go of your vision, right? as a practitioner, you continuing to hold your client's vision for them, that is a way of cheering them on and celebrating them. You know, sometimes you have to say, you've got this. I know that you can do this because that is a way of celebrating. Okay, we are almost or just about at the end of our time. I'm going to give you homework. I realize there's one thing that I didn't say share when we were talking about honoring what is. And I just want to make sure that I say it because it's really important, which is, you know, we looked at lots of different pieces of honoring what is, but back to the piece about privilege that we looked at in our listening module, it is always important to honor what is for clients when something is not going well, when they are having a difficulty, when they are having a frustration, when they're having an obstacle. It is especially important for you if you, as the practitioner, have a privilege that your client does not have, whether it has to do with race, with gender, being physically body-abled, whatever the privilege is. It is particularly important that if a client is having an obstacle or a difficulty or something not great happening, that you do not bypass it, because you might be looking through your filter of whatever the privilege is. In those situations, it is even more important to honor what is so that we don't run the risk of having our client not be seen or heard. Okay, in a moment, I'll open up for questions and takeaways. Take a moment and just jot down what's your takeaway from our call today. And then for homework, you'll have, I think you've got a worksheet this week. If you're working with a coaching partner, I want you to see if you can work in at least one celebration and one honoring what is into the conversation. Next week, we've got our practicum, so we'll practice all of this. And again, just what I was sharing in the beginning, for those of you that are interested in those extra support calls that I was talking about, the two Q&A calls a month and the extra practicum a month, it's joannalindenbaum.com/CMC. And if you want to ask me any questions on that, I'm more than happy to answer. All right, I know that we're past time. If you have to go, of course, please go. But I'd love to hear one or two takeaways or any questions that you have before we wrap for today. If there are any, does anybody want to share? Star two. Nope. Okay, then I'll trust that we're complete for today. I'm thinking about all of you. Can't wait for our practicum next week. I will talk to you soon. Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.